the wildlife or livestock, non-wildlife, that term, you'd have to address that head on. So you couldn't just bury that term, you'd have to address that term head on. So people have a pretty clear understanding of what you're working with and what you're moving forward with. Containment, also another critical issue that we said is a component of any alternative that would move forward, and it's certainly in all our alternative. Containment, though, did not necessarily mean, and I'll use the term that Dick threw out, is no Berlin Wall. So it could not be something that would be similar to, you know, a 10-foot tall impermeable type of fence. But there would have to be containment. Some of the other issues that we've talked about previously, disease-free, you'd have to take into consideration the grazing leases, any economic impacts. There would have to be hunting opportunities. We did not go into great detail about what that exactly meant, but there would have to be a hunting opportunity to ensure that the hunting sportsmen would have some component that would be a benefit to them also. You'd have to respect the boundaries. One of the bigger things that we talked about that we thought was very important was beyond tobacco promises. So you'd have to be able to say do what you say you're going to do and back that up with adequate funding. You'd have to have money involved. And another component of adequate funding, I think, that we also talked a little bit about is that you don't necessarily want to obligate your future generation. So you're going to put together a program that, you know, in the previous legislature or whatever down the line, that they keep obligating funding to that. So you wouldn't want to obligate the future generations and the future taxpayers. And then also you'd have to have sound resource science. That was pretty clear in a lot of the public comment that you have to take into consideration the resource and do adequate study and make sure that the resource is protected. The second alternative.
So can I stop you a minute? So many of the parameters and constraints came from that list from last time as well as the guidance. That you're applying those. But the basic concept is a public-private partnership with willing partners on both sides.
Correct.
And then all that other stuff.
And all that other stuff. Other good stuff.
They wanted to look like overachievers, so you know they went to the guy who said it was. So, if you have any clarifying questions about this initial approach, now remember they're not saying, "Hooray, let's go with it." It just was a reasonable approach: public-private partnership with willing partners on both sides, and then all the whistles and bells. Any clarifying questions from the discussion group members?
No, I have a question. Can you give an example of what you think of when you think of public-private partnership?
In any situation?
Yes.
I think we left it really broad. We did, but we did talk about, I mentioned that once we got done with sort of all these parameters, which, Ginny, you're right, they came from the public today, they came from last meeting and all that. I mentioned that at least many of the principles that we talked about are happening on our project without the public agency aspect of it, right? Taylor brought up, I won't give away, alternative two, which I suggested public-private partnership among unwilling partners. That didn't apply. But Taylor started out with any private landowner who might have a big enough acreage to make it worthwhile. I mean, we talked a little bit about numbers and decided that was for another discussion. It obviously has to be something that's worth doing, but manageable. So it could be that. I don't know, I suppose it could be state land, or it could be, I don't know, county land. I don't know how much of that is even around, but mostly it has to do with the landscape.
One good example would be the Green Range. Yeah. That's the Green Range is private, it's got the public license, so that'd be one example. I don't think we'd have any problem if they said we just want to expand it and grow it here and keep it in this area, but that kind of fit with our model.
Can anybody else offer an example from the discussion group? Please, Ron.
private grazing on state wildlife management areas.
Yeah.
Block management.
Yeah.
We actually do a lot of that.
So the trick here is that the interests on both sides get served. You're not asking me to do it for nothing. I'm not asking you to do the unreasonable. Please.
The one issue that would have to be kind of resolved here is the game farming thing. I mean, there was the initiative to outlaw game farming. So, I have a lot done
there. Okay, all right.
I mean, that could be something that would come up.
So game farming would be different.
Well,
that if I own the land, the bison is declared wildlife, and I allow an outfitter part of the time, think of the work we did in the Madison on elk. You know, I can outfit on a piece of property, but I also had an agreement that the public would be able to hunt as long as we coordinated the permits. So you're saying you wouldn't want to go so far as a game farm because it's illegal, but we do not have an outfitting industry.
Right.
Hey. You guys didn't do too bad so far.
So we're done.
No,
oh, okay. Our second alternative, we looked at kind of similar to the first alternative, but we looked more on the tribal state partnership scenario. A couple of the things that we did talk about specifically, we didn't necessarily go through all the components, critical components that I listed on the first alternative, but we did at least identify a couple of very important ones that we thought were critical if you were going to move forward with this type of alternative. One, the agreement on the hunting opportunities for the hunters. There would have to be something that would be written down as either a contract or an agreement, an MOU, something along those lines that would provide a hunting opportunity for the hunting public. And then also something on the containment, similar to the management agreement that was like on the Fort Peck or Fort Belknap with containment issues. Those components of that agreement, I think, are also very important. And then, like all the other alternatives, funding is also an issue, I think, that's going to come up with every alternative that we talk about. So we just identified that also. So those are just some of the, I guess, specifics that we thought were really important if you were going to move forward with this type of alternative.
So the alternative framework would be that we would put bison on the landscape in Montana within reservation boundaries.
Yes.
So, clarifying questions. From discussion group members.
When you say containment, what would you guys recommend for the concept if they stopped being contained?
So can I treat your question as a rhetorical question? Because I'm going to wait till after we've heard them all and then see if there are some comments in a fairly brief way from the public. Is that okay? Because otherwise I'll lose my time in getting to all four groups.
Sorry, I thought that's what you were asking.
No, from the discussion group members, I wondered if they had any clarifying questions.
Oh, sorry.
I hope that doesn't offend you. I'm just trying to manage time. Thank you. So we don't know what the containment would look like. They're just saying they would have to be contained in the same way. And containment, by the way, is a management strategy. Okay, that's a way of doing it. Any clarifying questions from discussion group members on this?
Well, no, I don't clarify because I've got to be. As you were told, I bet there's a lot of these similar concepts. Let's remind ourselves that in Lewistown, finally crystallized that containment straight out of the law. It is a requirement now. So all alternatives are going to have
to. The guiding principle says we follow the law.
Follow the law. That's right.
Okay. All right. Then the other thing about that particular alternative, you said that it would be, the alternative isn't just that we would put bison on the landscape in Montana within reservation boundaries. You also said, and there would be some kind of arrangement where the hunting public in Montana would be allowed to hunt on reservations. We don't know what that would look like. We don't know if tribes would own the bison. And then that would be a whole different deal than if bison or Montana wildlife, such as South Platte Reservation, in order to hunt there, I have to get a tribal hunting license. Those are different scenarios in how that would work.
Yeah,
but that's part of the alternative.
That's part of the alternative. We were instructed not to get into detail, so we didn't.
Except on the first
Well, and you did a nice job. Thank you very much. All right. Is there a group that would like to go second? Jim, are you saying you would?
I'll give it a whirl.
You're the spokesperson, Keith?
I guess so.
Okay.
I was just nominated.
Two alternatives.
I'm gonna try to squeeze for three.
Hey.
All right. And I'm going to make them real simple because I don't want to duplicate a lot of what's been said. We'll just say ditto. We won't get into the details of it. But the three in the discussion, there'll be some physical constraints, some constraining parameters that I'll talk about after I go through the three. But I'm going to blurt them out there real quick so you get them. The first approach would be a tribal-only approach, which is really quite similar to what you all mentioned. Putting them on tribal land and getting into some kind of agreement or arrangement or some type of thing on an appropriate tribal property. The second idea that came up was that, well, what if it's a large private landowner, just some large private landowner that wants to be a partner with the state and put them there and get into arrangements, et cetera, et cetera. But the third one that I'm going to put on the table may be in opposition, but the one that creates the most angst to my group is it's very similar to your public-private partnership, but I'm going to use the term a shared stewardship model. And that could be a public-private, tribal, different arrangements of landowners and jurisdictions who form some type of agreement and are willing partners, and very much so with a lot of the constraints that Jay expressed and that team expressed, that's the one that creates a lot of anxiety because it has so many unknown elements, and it's the most difficult to describe because it is absolutely location dependent. It depends on where you're at and what the arrangement of land is and all those types of things. But I think it's a model worth looking at as an approach. But I want to jump to the parameters, and we have a pretty lengthy discussion. Number one, management has to be managed. Populations have to be managed, both demographically and spatially. That's what you do with all wildlife, by the way. This we get hung up on this term free range, but all wildlife management everywhere in North America, we manage the numbers and the distribution of animals. We do it in many, many, many ways. Hunting seasons, we have certain fencing programs. There's fencing programs here in Montana. Believe it or not, this guy down the interstate at Wolf Creek, and what you see a bunch of fences along the interstate which steer animals to crossings. So we didn't want to get hung up on that, but we want to really stress in this group that management is very, very, very important and what that looks like and how it plays out and all the parameters around that. We just don't have time to chase those details today. The second thing...
I'll do tomorrow.
Tomorrow. The second thing is we may need an entire transformation in the standard North American model for bison. And I've been one of those guys that got my butt kicked many times at WAFWA and OFWA and other wildlife meetings where I challenge this business of that there is this North American model and it's the only working model. Bison are challenging us to say there may be something different we have to do. And that could include different business arrangements. And I'm not saying we commercialize wildlife, but I'm saying there might be need to be very creative about the business model and the management model. It has to be something new. I don't have the answer for you what that is, but I think all of the group, there were some interesting ideas of what that might look like. And I think it could be some fruit for discussion, maybe tomorrow and probably on for the next several decades. But we need a new model for this species, and it's really challenging for us. And we did then get hung up on Yellowstone a little bit because that's part of the problem in Yellowstone, is it's the old model framework of a species belonging on the land, a native species, and we do a hunting program, yada, yada. Doesn't work there because it's a completely different arrangement in space and time and jurisdictions. So
We do have the advantage of bison in a new geography of starting from the beginning, starting from scratch. And we want to be careful not to get hung up on all the bad things in Yellowstone, because that didn't start from scratch. It started from a whole different arrangement. And that would be, I think, some of the big thoughts that our group shared, unless you guys had something else to mention.
Thank you, Keith.
One of our things was also that they go where they are accepted in that area, and the land use plans and stuff are respected.
Okay, that's one of the parameters that would be very important. Connected to management and constraint and those things. So you guys had like 3.5 alternatives. You had the first one that had to do with bison on tribal lands, with the management agreement. You didn't mention honey, but the management agreement. The second one was a large landowner that didn't matter who it was, but a large private landowner. You might. The third one was a collaborative one. And when you say, is there an example? I'm thinking again, did Pat Flowers leave the room? I'm thinking of Madison, where you've got 7,000 elk in an area people think there ought to be 4,000, and so what happens is ranchers collaboratively get together to decide outfitting and numbers of public hunters, sets, et cetera. Am I saying it right? But it's location dependent, because you have to have not just a willing person, but willing collaborators who can live within the framework and that kind of stuff. And then your fourth, your half one after that was, we go to Colorado or Washington and use the new stuff that they're selling now that's not legal in Montana. And we creatively figure out a new model.
I just thought, I'm talking about a new model, something different. If you tag it at Colorado or some other state, I might get my butt kicked again. But I think that's what the wildlife agencies are struggling with right now all across North America. I happen to go to North America regularly, off on off, but it's a really tough discussion. And these agencies are transforming right now, and it's a hard time. And so the old model's not working that good.
Keith, my reference to Colorado and Washington was about the sale of cannabis, and that possibly that would help people create a
I won't even touch the cannabis thing.
So could I see the representation in that group? So, Jim, it's in my interest too.
I just find a balance between private property rights.
Here, we won't get this on the record.
I mean, it's in my interest to respect the private property rights of everyone, and in the process, to deal with this challenge of, excess bison coming out of Yellowstone Park.
Okay, thank you.
It's in my best interest too.
I want you, Christy, not and Vicky. Thank you. He just helped. I'm an old woman, Sorry.
I don't have a name tag till then. It's in my best interest to protect property rights and see that the state law and its ramifications about free roaming and those containment are abided by.
Thank you. Keith,
it's in my interest to promote the conservation of the species for the benefit of mankind.
Thank you. Marvin?
It's in my interest to protect the animal and also to bring forth the tribal interest.
Okay, so we have four people here. I'm not leaving you out, Mike, but you're the local partner representative sitting there. We have four people with different interests who came up with three pretty interesting, and I'm not suggesting the new model is not interesting, because it really is, but it's going to take a lot. So they came up with three pretty good alternatives that actually, if we could figure out how to make any one of those work with enough parameters on them, probably would serve interests of people that take. So, any clarifying questions?
The one thing I don't know if he stressed enough was the management and that kind of stuff was really, really brought out is that there has to be strong parameters on any of these programs.
That's why this has to be solid.
Yes, very definitely.
Thank you, Vicki.
And one other thing I forgot is relationships and partnerships. You start with relationships, and we did discuss that a lot, to gain the trust to make a partnership work. And sometimes, I know I work in government myself, we tend to want to jump to a partnership. We haven't built all the right relationships. So relationship first, partnerships later.
So this may seem like a character flaw of mine, but when I work with teams of people, I say, worry more about being trustworthy as an individual or an organization than worrying about whether he or she I can trust. Because they're not ever going to trust me unless I trust them. So I'm really glad you had that conversation. Two people today in the audience have talked to me about rebuilding trust and the importance of building trust with the department and maintaining that. So thanks. Okay, are you guys next? Thank you, Ron. You're the spokesperson.
Well, my interest is in preserving and advancing our public hunting heritage and wildlife conservation achievement in this country. At the same time, we are preserving and advancing traditional family agriculture.
Okay.
My interest is protecting the natural resources of our area and representing the people who live in that community and their property rights.
Thank you.
It's in my best interest to help build trust when it comes to delivering conservation at Bald's public lands.
Thank you. So what were your two alternatives? Or seven,
well,
whatever you ended up with.
They did three alternatives, so we're going to bring the average down.
I think that's one.
Well, 1.5 from us.
Okay.
And I'll start with the half, just to get it out of the way.
Okay.
Advance an alternative, which would be basically a sealed laboratory experiment where an area is defined on a map and bison, a number of bison are placed within that area, and they are strictly confined and segregated from the surrounding livestock area. We did not go very far along that train of thought, because that turns out to be a rather narrow flat top view. Once you step over the edge, it's straight down into that long list of issues and concerns and all the criteria that would have to be met. There was no step down.
So it would be quite a job to flesh that out.
Exactly.
But it's on the table.
Yeah, and frankly, I think we really did agree that regardless of what you try to do, following the law in terms of confinement is going to be, we've got to get some buy-in from the bison here someplace. So, anyway, the alternative that we did agree to discuss would be a private land-based experiment, very similar to what Jay described, in which the public agency, Fish, Wildlife, and Park, would lease a private-public land area at market rates for grazing, on which to stock a limited number of publicly owned bison. I'm not calling them wild, I'm not calling them the best, just who owns the thing. Publicly owned bison to be managed for purposes of balancing the stocking rate with the forage and movement stability, persuading those bison to stay where we want them to be. Public hunting would be one major exercise for both revenue and constituency support and population control. We didn't really set down a criteria for this, that the front end cost of initiating this kind of, emphasizing the word experimental project, the front end cost of this should be private funding. That the non-government organizations, other private interests who are advocating the initiation of bison restoration to do a major part of the front-end funding to get it started. Then we have a list of five major parameters. No, I'm sorry, well, five. There should be a pre-action economic and habitat study with local ranchers and other interests agree to those stocking numbers and economic numbers. Local steering committee with local decision made about the operation management of that experiment. This would have to be a litigation-free zone. That all participants will agree on the front end that this will be an experimental project, and we're not going to sue each other over it if we're meeting the terms of our agreement. Sunset in 5 years, and an early exit option if this thing does not work. I should say in our discussion here that the no action option was a presence in our discussion. And,
really?
And that we talked, and this was the most valuable part of the discussion to me, is talking about why should we fool with this kind of project in the first place, especially from the point of view of the people of the land, the rural agricultural people, who are quite happy with the status quo. Why should they want to give anything a try? And the best explanation I could come up with that was that the people who are advocating for increased bison presence on the land are not going to go away until we do try something. So unless we're willing to, two or three times a year from now to eternity, keep meeting on a sunny day to haggle about these things, try something. And what comes, what derives from that point is, well, it's still got to be something small enough with the risk control to a degree that people will give it a try, because the word has already been used here that the whole problem that I heard in the comments this morning is there is no trust between tribes and people here. And until we do something where people can size each other up and observe their behavior, there's not going to be any trust. That relationship that Keith just talked about does not come from sitting in a room talking. You got to get out there and do something together and size up people's actions before any level of trust can initiate. I'll stop there and turn it over.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Keith, clarifying questions for this group. Caleb, please.
You mentioned the point about publicly owned. What came up in our discussion was the concept of livestock versus wildlife, and what we identified is that either side wants that label because the definition or the connotation goes with that label. So did I hear you saying that by calling public owned, you don't call livestock or wildlife, you just say publicly owned and throw off the connotation altogether of livestock or wildlife?
It's a circular argument. You know, wild is in the eye of the beholder, just like pretty and ugly. In the eye of the beholder. And the way our laws and customs and habits work, it's who owns the thing that is responsible for it. So the ownership description.
So the alternative, I'm trying to remember what the half was. Half eight, half.
Yeah, no.
The half one you said first.
The half alternative, that was simply is if you say put 1,000 head of bison on the UL Bend area
built the Berlin Wall around them and see what happens.
Then they fall off.
You know, yes. Something like, okay. Something on that order.
All right. So the alternative that you are, that you talked about in your group and you agreed to bring forward is that it would be leased private land. It would be privately funded, not publicly. The animals would be placed there, I'm assuming under the parameters of disease, breed, all those things. There would be management strategies in place, so this is part of the agreement. But the animal would be publicly owned. Would be publicly owned.
Exactly.
And now I'm thinking of Keith's new model of a publicly owned animal in Montana means that it could be hunted.
Yes.
And a publicly owned animal on private land could be outfitted. I mean, you know, an outfitter. You could have all of that kind of stuff. But a publicly owned animal on a piece of private land, if I wanted to send him to slaughter, I'd have to be working on Keith's new model that's got economics built into it. Now we're talking about the paradigms of the public hunter as well.
What we're talking about here is a negotiated arrangement that basically is outside the normal paradigm of animal husbandry and certainly of what we would call wildlife management. You know, I struggled for a long time with these adjectives. And I can take you out and show you some herds of antelope and northeastern Montana that are just as domesticated as you would want an animal to be because they are tied to that alfalfa piggy. And yet they are what you would call a wild animal. They're not confined by a fence, but they are certainly confined by a food supply. So you can get into these endless rhetorical tail chasing over adjectives if you choose to. I just found saying publicly owned defines who's responsible for it, who's taking the action, and doesn't evoke these other conflicts.
And depending on how management occurred, you might have to revisit the things that can happen within publicly owned. That's the bare document we need to examine.
Yes, I don't think you need to go far enough into the weeds to worry about outfitting and things like that.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, what all can happen? Please, Taylor.
Let me say one more thing, because we really spent some time, we didn't come up with that name, though, but here's what I was thinking to myself. It's about trust and commitment and responsibility. That's what we're missing. It's commitment to do what you say you're going to do, responsibility to actually do it, and trust that you are going to do it. But what would it take for the livestock, people say they've got to be called livestock, what would they take? Because they would go with public ownership and don't call them livestock. But give us boundaries, give us sound resource science, give us private property protection, and give us responsibility in that. And then we might go with that. Now what about the wildlife people? What about the wildlife? Well, they say, you got to call them wildlife. You can't call them public owned. Well, but would it be okay if we called them public owned if we gave you public hunting opportunities, access by the public so they could enjoy them, management by fish, wildlife, and parks, increased numbers of animals, and genetic diversity? If you got all those things, would you be okay with the label?
And we're asking those questions rhetorically right now. That's really important to think about.
But there again, Senator, I don't think you need to negotiate that. Somebody owns everything out there already.
And if I was going to
and they're already responsible for it. Already. And Mike Lung is not going
to. The one thing we talked about was the management of this process. This experimental ranch, if you want to call it, would be managed by local neighboring ranches, fish and game. Whatever supportive personnel needed to be there to manage it, everybody having one vote, and the voting would be made by that group on a decision on this operation.
So now we're kind of into the collaborative thing that they were talking about also. Local, surrounding, possibly impacted landowners.
And I think we're on the same model as Jay's group started off with.
So if I was one of those agricultural interests, which I am not, but if I was, I would also be thinking about what Keith said. And I'm wondering, you know, In 1974, I was on the Wild Horse Ranch with Bureau of Land Management. That's a disclosure. They hired a home economist there to do that. So, Taylor, if I was one of those agricultural interests, I might want to be able to call. And the way I might want to call is not just for money. Maybe I'd want to sell those animals for meat. I'm just saying, I'm just trying to complicate the thinking here. There are all ways, all kinds of ways to think about doing business in a different way, especially since we've had the economic thing raised so much today. It might be illegal right now, but we don't know.
With the caveat that we're dealing with a peculiar species. This is species specific.
And I would agree, and I think that's where we're struggling in all of bison world, is that this represents a different species that might be a different model. And what that is we're great, we're having a great discussion. We're all having it too. And it does have this huge business side to it as well, because we can't forget that I have to remember the NDA, and I like bison producers, and they're doing some pretty amazing things. There is this model out there as well. It's a dance, but I think that we're probably going to have to have a different model that looks different for bison than it has been additionally for elk, deer, or other species. But that's the big challenge. How do we do it without violating some ancient trusts and responsibilities for species that are still valid?
Because if we think there are cultural things in place for the agricultural community, there are huge cultural things in place for wildlife management, hunters, all that kind of business. And we don't have to decide if they're pretty or ugly, who's there, the bison. Okay? Nice job, you guys. We have one group to go. Tom, are you the spokesperson?
I seem to be, because I have the iPad, apparently the most legible.
What a technological thing.
So I'm not quite sure how to, I think we had a big alternative and a small alternative. And we spent a great deal of our time on the small alternative. And within that, I guess the objectives are providing the most assurances we could to local communities that this thing would be under tight control and that local concerns would be met wherever and however possible. But there were some things that are pretty hard to answer within that discussion. So we had some benchmarks, like protecting the tax base, zero tolerance for impacts, willing private landowners, local control, and we went around on that, and we recognized that there is sort of a tipping point between your advice and an advisory committee and a veto power. And somewhere I think we all agreed that either one of those isn't acceptable. If it's just an advisory group, well, that leaves the decision maker the opportunity to say, well, I'm not listening to you. And if there's veto power on the part of local control, that's sort of its own problem. So how do you fashion something that's in between those things? Funding for management has to be secure. And in contrast to those that said NGOs should fund the initial part of the project, our thought was, or our parameter for the small option was that it should be internal to FWP so that there is a higher assurance that the budget to maintain and manage will be sustained. Time frame for judging success or failure, there had to be clear parameters for judging the success of this small option. A key piece was that any bison used to stock
an option should be disease-free and that they should not be Yellowstone bison. We just take the disease issue off the table. We really kind of didn't talk much about this, but I'll just throw some other things out that we bandied about. I mean, when we say small, we're probably talking 100 animals, somewhere in there. We think we're talking about public land only, to just leave private land out of the equation. Again, a contrast from another approach. We did recognize a zone management approach in terms of a landscape where bison are desired or the primary focus, and then one where they're not tolerated at all. We debated a third area where there might be some grayness to that, but basically they're not tolerated. It's just there's a little more flexibility in response. We recognize that 100 animals means minimal public hunting opportunity. Some sort of annual reporting to the community in terms of where this experiment pilot is going, and that obviously has to be tied into this balance point between mere advice and the veto power. If the project fails, bison are removed. That's the default. So that's the first option. Small landscape, 10,000 acres equals 100 animals at a stocking rate of one animal to 100 acres. Seemed to us to be a pretty gentle stocking rate. We recognize this is all pretty arbitrary. And then the second option would be the big alternative. And the way to that alternative would be for FWP to define or identify the largest grass landscape in the state where there aren't wildlife-livestock conflicts, where livestock are not presently grazing. As an example of that would be UL Bend, where there's 56,000 acres of grass that has never been grazed since the Fish and Wildlife Service acquired it. And there are some adjacent allotments on CMR that are not presently grazed now. There's probably 100,000 contiguous acres. And whether it's there or another place, the goal would be to find the largest piece of grass where there aren't livestock conflicts, and then figure out a stocking rate based on that, and whether that's the herd size is 1 to 24, or 1 to 50, or 1 to 100 acres. At 100 acres, or at 1 to 100 for 100,000 acres, you're talking a herd size of about 1,000 animals. That larger objective or larger goal, hunting, it becomes a key management tool, and probably a primary tool for not only managing numbers, but where animals go, because hunters can, we do know from our experience with elk that they're going to be pretty responsive to where hunting pressure is and isn't. We would replicate a zone approach, a primary area where bison are tolerated or desired, another area where they're clearly not tolerated, and that could be a mix of sort of adjacent geography or private landowners who say, I don't want bison on my property. There's zero tolerance there. And how that's administered, of course, is a detail. Primarily, as we identified in September, at least one goal or objective is to manage bison as wildlife, like other Montana wildlife species. And so in this approach, you could have things like cooperative agreements and the local advisory committee or some sort of local committee, but primary management responsibility would rest with the Montana Fish and Wildlife Commission and with the department, and the object would be to manage as we manage other wildlife.
So that's a publicly owned animal.
And that's a publicly owned animal. Well, it has wildlife, it's publicly owned. So that would be the second. So big, small, a lot of the same elements of management, but really a different scale.
Thank you. So, Gene, it's in my interest. It's in my interest to really understand the underlying concerns of people that live in the vicinity where bison currently are or likely could be to gain acceptance of bison on the landscape.
Thanks, Tom. It's in my interest.
It's in my interest to reflect my naturally optimistic nature that we can really do this in a way that respects local communities and builds a wild bison herd in Montana's conservation legacy and builds support across the state for that legacy.
And wild again, meaning that wildlife publicly owned.
Yes.
I do have to say I don't agree with that larger project area.
So it's in my interest.
In my interest, like to identify and protect the natural resources and other wildlife issues in the area and the habitat constraints, and really need to protect the tax base and our local communities so our local governments can operate, including CDs.
Thank you. Chelsea?
It is in my interest to honor private property rights, preserve and protect agriculture, and conserve the natural resources that they all rely on.
Thank you. So, Dean, when you said you didn't agree with us, what you're saying is we've created those alternatives, but it's not one you vote for. Okay. All right.
You made that clear.
And I would just reiterate really quickly that we did talk a lot about the first one, so we didn't really give ourselves enough time to hash out the second one.
Talk about the small
one. The small one. But I think it really does come back to it, and what I know probably to the frustration of Tom and Jean is that Dean and I kept going back to the fact that you have to gain that local support, and how you do that is probably going to, you know, people fundamentally are going to disagree on how you gain local support, what avenues you take to do that. But we really felt like with that first alternative, using some sort of local control, whether it, you know, we have to find a happy medium. As Tom said, we cannot have it can't be the only answer is no, and it cannot be that no matter how long we put our suggestions in, nothing is ever acted upon. So a cooperative management agreement of some type was sort of the alternative, and that's where I guess sort of using another source for bison to stock the area also came from, to rebuild that trust, maybe take a step in sort of distancing this project from Yellowstone and the issues that affect the area there, and make it known that this is different, this is a different project, and that what those landowners say is going to be taken into account.
Thank you. Clarifying questions, Keith.
Sorry, I might have blanked out. It happens a lot with me. Tom, so in the pilot project, or the small project, you said if it failed, bison disappeared. What if it succeeds?
We didn't discuss that.
A step-up option.
No.
The weather, yeah.
And we'll be working on all those. You know, people, I think, did a great job of giving us a set of concepts that were kind of approaches in terms of alternatives. And some people feel called more than others, but we're going to make sure that those things. Other clarifying questions? Please, Ron.
I want to direct this to this group specifically, probably the Hall group, is that we haven't talked very much about money. We had a statement in our alternative about who should pay the front end cost. Speaking as a public hunter who drops $100 or so a year on resident licenses and fees, unless we're actually going to finally tap into Jeff's FWP slush fund.
I thought we were going to not talk about trust right now.
unless some new source of public money displays itself quickly, the revenues from hunting license sales, and this some commenter pointed this out earlier, are not likely to pay for very much for several years into an experimental program. So there's going to be a upfront charge, a front-end charge, to start anything going, whatever the proposal is. And I'm submitting that I don't think FWP is going to have that money. It's going to have to come from somebody else. And I think, you know, I'm challenging folks to come up with some alternatives.
So, Ron, tomorrow after lunch, that's one of the topics that I wanted to not try to make the alternative development dependent on that, although you guys each have different ways of doing it. But after lunch tomorrow, that's one of the major topics, regardless of the alternative. Every one of these would require dollars. So, and I don't want to just do a brainstorming of all the possibilities, but we will have to talk about that. Thank you. Keith, please.
An option for the state to consider, and it's happening in the wildlife world more and more as I go around North America, is to create a natural business plan. And that could be some option that I think would be helpful for legislators, that would be helpful for commissioners to see that business plan. How you get this from a concept, an idea, whether it's startup money you get from NGOs or wherever, and grow up to something sustainable. And actually write a business plan. And more, we're being asked to deliver those from our conservation organization. Conservation plans are great. Complementary business plans are also very useful to help guide that.
And in other issues, not particular to the department, but other issues that you citizens work with, I'm thinking some things in Libby, places like that. This is exactly the kind of group that continues, and it might be one of the things they would do for the department. And you guys would do, should you continue, is draft a business plan. Because you have people at the table who might think in business planning terms way different than we might think of that kind of business. Thank you. Well, please.
Well, I found this when I pulled that back, and it's kind of an interest that isn't represented at this table. It's certainly a hypothesis of many of us in the conservation community that a prairie reserve some sort of a wide-ranging bison herd plus elk plus ecology is a potential economic driver for the state, part of the state in the past. And as a driver could bring some benefits to local economies, and I have no desire to overstate that, but you can go to places like Wall, South Dakota, and Badlands Park, and Medora, and no, it's not West Yellowstone, but there is a level of activity there, especially in the non-hunting months, that doesn't exist in central Montana. So, you know, that, to the extent that hypothesis is true, there are some people that will benefit economically from this that really aren't represented. And it's a great curiosity to be that they're not more outspoken. But it is one piece of this puzzle that's really been under.
Can I speak? Please, so I can go right ahead.
They keep pointing to out here in the middle of nowhere. Have you been there? That's not all weather roads. That's not travelable. It rains. It's not winter country. I mean,
Vicki, I appreciate that. And I said I don't want to overstate it. And Dick will tell you that I have said Dick will know we're successful when they pave the Dry Fork Road and the Pushhead Bay Road because people want to come and look. Because I absolutely agree with you. Nobody's going to go if they're going to be mired. But, you know, those are things you can discuss.
So regardless of whether the level of agreement about those things, that's part of what a business plan does, evaluate the economic potential. But then you also get into things like economically it might be good in some ways to pay the North Fork Road, but people related to grizzly bears don't want that to happen. So there's a whole bunch of analysis you're saying that would go into it, but there would be, you would anticipate a benefit of some kind.
We would.
Well, so then again, on what we've seen is like with resource management plans and stuff, and they keep telling us, well, it's a black-footed fair, how many? I mean, and then their economic impact to our county was great. Well, guess what? They're nocturnal out in the middle of nowhere, and it was not an economic influence. And so the economic people were totally wrong.
So what were, a person who isn't here, who was here last time, is Leslie Robinson, who's a county commissioner from Phillips County. We have other county commissioners here. And when... But county commissioners
And what she brought to the table last time was, remember, we need to be able to pay for the things that the county provides. I heard someone talk today about dollars for the schools, all of those kinds of things. And so this is not just about a tourist coming. There's all kinds of things that would go into a business plan. And I'll tell you what tickles me, and that is that the heat is starting to come about how you would look at those kinds of things. We might be advancing a little bit with the issue. So I appreciate the comments that we had about economics. And is Dave still here from this morning? He was sitting.
Dave Pepin?
He was Valley County Commissioner. Yeah. So he said this morning up here, he's talking to me, he said, in an EIS, is there any kind of economic stuff? Well, generally there is. You don't just look at biological, you look at social and economic as well. That's at least a starting place. So I appreciate all of you who've spoken, regardless of your comment, about the need to have economics involved.
Well, and you've got tourism and all of our fire, EMTs, all that, that's all volunteers. So it puts an economic, pressure on the counties.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you. So what I'd like to do now is, what do you think about this? People have some pretty good ideas. Discussion group members, if you, Jeff?
Well, yeah. I just have a question for Jeff. And I know that they're not supposed to go there, but since we're talking about economic models and business plans, has there been any discussion at all in the Department of Interior on managing what their business plan or business model is for Bison and Yellowstone Park, other than just doing nothing?
You know, I don't know that I can really answer that. Pat might be better. He works more closely. I know they have to have a business plan for managing the park. I'm assuming that includes you all, but I don't know specifics.
Pat, you want to talk about that at all?
The park downhill.
Jim, I think that starts from the premise that they have done nothing. And I think, in fairness, that's not the case. They've worked as one of five partners on that plan now, and now two tribal partners and ITDC as well. And they've actually, since I've been involved, shipped to the chagrin of a lot of conservation interests, thousands of bison to slaughter out of a trap in the park at their expense. So they've actually invested a lot in managing that population. And we're just embarking now on a new plan, and they're paying the freight on the consulting firm that's assisting us collectively with developing that plan. So I think they are committed to developing a good new plan. They've shown a lot of commitment, both in terms of research and actual work on the ground and implementing the current plan. That's my take, and I've been there kind of every step of the way for the last 16 years. So I would disagree with your initial premise. And we can also disagree on the outcome, and there's a lot of criticism of what's gone on there. It's a complex set of factors, and if you've got a lot of time and several beers, I'll explain them all.
I'll take you up on that because I have an idea I want to share.
Okay,
good. Oh, good. Okay. So this also goes back to the business of how difficult an animal the bison is to manage, a different kind of animal, the frustration level in all places, including over there, is fairly high. What the heck do you do? You remember when they were hunting them a few years ago and everybody stood outside and kind of heard these big prehistoric animals going like this? The hunter pump animal fell over, all the TV stations had that. I mean, it's a really difficult situation, really. But I am not going to have beer with you, so you guys figure that out. So what I'd like to do now is ask you if you would go back into your small groups. And what you're going to do is follow through. I'm not going to mix you up in other groups because you've already figured out among you where you agree, where you disagree, those kinds of things. And I have
several steps here. You don't have to do every alternative. If you did two and you didn't really like one of them, then do the one you really liked. But if it's a good one, you might want to do a little additional work on it. You have from now until 5:30 to work on it. And then you have tomorrow morning from when we start at 8 o'clock and I say, sort of, here's the logistics and this is how lunch will work and that kind of business, until 9:30 to get your stuff together completely so that you would be able to say to the group, we believe this alternative or these alternatives are things, are alternatives that the department should consider analyzing in their EIS process, okay? Think of some new ones tonight, that's great, but I'm gonna give you until 9:30 tomorrow morning, and then we're gonna bring them to the table, talk about them, and see which ones you would suggest going forward to be analyzed, not as a recommendation. So here are the steps that I want you to follow. In very clear terms, I want you to describe the approach or philosophy for your alternative. You sort of did that, but I want you to clean it up, especially after this discussion. I want you to state the desired outcomes, broad and specific. So if you say one of the outcomes is that we put bison back on the landscape in Montana, I'm going to say, so what? I mean, that's a big, broad go to heaven or motherhood or whatever. I want specific desired outcomes. You know, the broad one's okay, but what are you really trying to pull off here? Third, what kind or kinds of locations? And for example, you guys describe both in small and large, the kinds of locations. If you end up doing both of those alternatives, you also said, well, here's a specific area of we could, with adjacent lands, look at 100,000 acres, et cetera. But other people didn't look at specific locations. But it's one of the things I want you to do. This may not go forward in the alternative should the department decide to analyze it, but I'd like you to at least give us an example or we think this could happen in this place. Four, the specific constraints and parameters. You've gone back, some of you, When Jay Bodger spoke, you did a great job on those. We've already talked about some of those when we met in September. But I want you to really think about it. If you were going to have this alternative really fly, if it was to be successful, what would have to be in place in terms of a parameter and a constraint? And within that, you know you're going to have to talk about containment. And I heard today everything from the Berlin Wall to natural containment. So you're going to have to talk about that. And then, what are the measures in that alternative that need to be monitored? I'm guessing that when we talk about them, they'll be pretty similar in each of them. But Keith talked about numbers, but he also talked about demographics. So are you going to look at the ratio between mamas and babies and bulls and all that business? Are you going to measure how often they get out of containment? Are you going to measure, what is it that you're going to measure or monitor? And then what would you suggest would be the decision triggers that would lead to adaptive management? So let's say one of these alternatives, the triggers, the things you identified in the measures led you in 3 or 4 years to say, or 1 year, this sucker is not working. We need to do something else or bag it or whatever. I just want you to talk about that. What are the measures that should be monitored and what are those triggers that really would cause you to say, we need to adapt this? It could go the other direction. It's working so well that we could add another 50 animals. Or it's working so well that we could try it in another place in the state because this business of grasses that were already available, we're going to try it somewhere else. So, you know, triggers can go either way. Adaptive management can go either way. You can back up or you can go forward. And then
what's the most useful involvement process you can think of? So when I think about the Charlie Russell, I think about the fact that that's federal land. So would a local group have to involve members of the public who weren't just local? Because that's public land that belongs to everybody. How do you handle the business of authorities? An advisory group or a working group, you cannot give your authority away legally. You can't say, you guys decide, I'll live with it. It's against the law. At the same time, I don't really like to be in an advisory group if they give us a nice lunch and that's the end of it. I don't have any power. So how do you institute, and some of you are members of groups that already have sort of working guidelines or protocols in place about how you make decisions. And in most cases, those decisions get audited. I've seen the Fish and Wildlife Commission honor recommendations of working groups, I would say 90% of the time. And the only time they didn't honor it is when the working group could not come to agreement and they had minority reports. So, Mike, I don't know if that gives you any confidence at all that there would be power in that group, but I want each of you in your groups to think about what would be the best involvement strategy. You know, and then I think about all the rest of the state. What would be the best involvement strategy to make sure that the alternative went forward? And you know, we always use the term buy-in, and I've come to believe that ownership is a better word than buy-in, because the only way I'm really going to support something as a member of one of those local groups is if I feel responsible for it. The worst thing about this kind of working group is that if we spend enough time together, you will really connect in your relationships. And the bad thing is that people sitting out there are going to say, you know what, Mike Lang, you sold the farm. Because relationships guard what you decide. If you can get a working group that guards what you decide and takes responsibility for it, owns it, it's pride to make it happen, you're going to be a lot further along than just seven of us are advisors. So I want you to really think about how that's going to work. And then, is this an alternative, and this doesn't fit everywhere, but is this an alternative where Mike Leske's comment last time about a test or a pilot that came forward, is this a place where you'd be better served to try a pilot with this alternative rather than going full bore with it? And that doesn't, now that I've heard the alternatives, that doesn't fit exactly, but for example, maybe in the alternative that has to do with tribal lands, maybe that's a place where you pilot it first, or it's already being piloted. So, again, you have a big job to do here. I want to have the alternatives, the suggested alternatives, fleshed out enough that you can have real discussion, and when we leave tomorrow, the members of the discussion group are able to say, you know, I think these three or four or five alternatives could be analyzed as part of the EIS, because we want to see what that analysis is. Economically, biologically, certainly socially and politically, etc. So, you okay? Big job. Think you can do that by 9:30 tomorrow night? I mean tomorrow. When I'm always yours till midnight, I work on a 24-hour basis. So, you think you can get that done by 9:30 tomorrow morning? But I ask this group, since you weren't real happy about your half alternative as happy, would you do the no action also? Walk the no action through this. Okay? What would happen? Very same kind of thing. In addition to your alternative. You guys are going to do large and small. You're going to flesh them out.
Yeah, I got it.
Well, remember, you are not forwarding these because you think it's the way to go. You're forwarding these so that the department has a look at some things people would like analyzed. And you're representing all the interests, not just your own.
One thing I've got to do here a little bit is to ask my alternative, and then
But would you believe that people have the right, so Jean may feel the same way, do you think that people have the right to have their alternative at the standoff? Because the public will look at all those again. Okay. And you guys are going to look at?
Question.
Both? Okay. Jim?
Well, I was just wondering if, since we had the same two alternatives, but just in the reverse order, if we could do the tribal one, since we have the tribal representative in our group, if they do the large land, private landowner one, and then we wouldn't be duplicating each other.
I think that's just fine as long as they agree.
Well, I'm just asking.
So what do you think?
That makes sense.
Okay.
But we're okay with that.
If we were working for a week, it might make sense to have two different groups do it to see what came out, but I think it's a good idea if that's okay with the two groups. Okay. Now, what about the collaborative one? The third weird one you have.
Well, that includes the Park Service, and I'm not sure that will fly right now.
Well, I think...
Well, maybe not.
It wasn't the new model one. It was the one that kind of had to do with the
sure, work. Sure.
Yeah,
really
you,
their public-private partnership. That just, yeah, whoever wants it.
Yeah, I think we'll see the
you guys can do that for okay.
That's a little narrower than it has to be.
Okay. So I'm going to ask you to do kind of an A and B look at it, including the shared stewardship one. Because the shared stewardship one really has ownership. Not owned ownership, but psychological ownership related. Okay? All right? So you're okay? All right. And you guys will use no action. All right. So it's about 10 minutes to 5, and I would like to... I don't want to open this to public comment, but I want to see if any members of the public would like to make any observations based on what they heard. This is not the same as testimony and all that. If you just have any comments, anybody, please.
Yes, my name is Chief Peter, the deceased here. I have a little cancer. And it seems to me, may run into the problem here. We're doing the same thing with bison. BLM did with feral horses. And what the problem they've got. The one thing these animals do, and I find worldwide, that's a lot of time, they populate, they eat day and night. And you can start out, one guy mentioned this morning, who wants 1,200 buffalo on, I don't remember how many thousand acres. Doesn't stay at that number. It increases. And one of these days, you're going to face the problem of cull hunting or eliminating that excessive population, whether overgrazing or whatever. You know, I know from experience, hunting bison, they can get real wild, real fast.
So, let me see if this is what we're hearing. Number one, population management is critical. And that means that you have to know what you're doing, numbers-wise, all that. Second, we need to acknowledge that Wild Horse Annie is not starting this with a bunch of school kids riding ladders and saving horses. That, which goes to the publicly owned animal and hunting, etc. And that hunting has to be a permissible thing, just as in the guiding principles, well, as a major tool, as well as possibly some other things.
This goes beyond hunting.
Okay.
This goes to culling. Because I know guys in South Africa that call 15,000 to 20,000 animals on game. That means bang, 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 150 of them a night for months.
We may be looking at the new
model. Same thing in Australia.
Yeah. Thank you. What a great caution. Thank you. Any other observations based on the discussion you heard?
You know, please. I guess it's just interesting that everybody here on the panel, they all represent individual
interests.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I'm just wondering why there wasn't an average citizen invited to participate on the panel. So that was just an observation.
Fair enough. All these people up here have just said that they're not.
Okay. Well, what are talking about, though? It's just something who's not.
Sure.
Just your regular person.
So you're talking about community interests. That's what you're talking about. It's not like a local community. community like Laurel, but in a general sense, okay, that's another thing we need to keep in mind. Thank you. Please, observation.
Conservation districts are all about the average person.
Hey, there you are.
There's Mr. Rogie over there.
Okay, you're not calling Dean average, you're just saying they're about it. Okay, Doc, observation, quick observation.
Yes, this animal has been a commercial animal for thousands of years on the plains, if you really want to observe that. I mean, and it's been hunted communally. And when you go out and hunt a bison bull, you're not going to do it in your Toyota pickup and bring it all back to the freezer. So can we look at different methods of harvesting this animal?
Wow. Okay. Any other observations? Oh, please.
I just thought it was great that ultimately from all of those alternatives, there was public alternatives represented, there was private alternatives represented, there was tribal alternatives, and there was combinations of them.
Yeah. I don't think anybody at the table ignored interest. They tried very hard to, that's why I think the mixed groups, you know, mixed marriages work out so. Thank you very much to the members of the public that came today. It was very helpful to have you here. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't see your hand. Sorry.
I do have one thing. I like all the stuff that's come out of this meeting today. You have to remember that in the 1960s, when ranchers were told we're going to put some elk out on the game range, and all ranchers said, let's do it. And they brought out the elk out, and now those ranchers have been kicked off that land because of federal government intervention. So, you know, if we start working together to put out bison, what's going to happen to us now? We've got to find some way to protect us from that.
Yeah. So trust issues are go way back, and number two, sometimes there are unintended consequences if you don't think it in the long term. Thank you. So I would like to have the members of the public give yourselves a hand. Thank you. Give these guys a hand. Our own director of anger is not going to be here, so we can do whatever we want. Thanks, you guys. I'll see you at 8 o'clock in the morning. And you can work until 5:30 if you want to. Or I'm going to say, you want to leave now because you're tired, you can, and we'll ask you to be finished with your alternatives by 10 o'clock instead of 9:30. Yeah. Yeah, that's your preference? Okay. Thank you very much.
Well, the price is going to be up tonight.